All right. Good morning, everyone. Just a note that our service is being recorded. And our prelude today will be Rondo alla Turca from Sonata No. 11K31 by Mozart, arranged by Per Conti and performed by Amber. Good morning again, and welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. My name is Johanna Hatch, and I've been a member of Prairie for about 11 years because I can always count it to my youngest child's age, and she just turned 10. I have participated as an RE educator. I'm also a member of the choir, and I was so happy that I was able to serve as a delegate to the General Assembly for the second time this year. We welcome you. We know you come here for different reasons: to find community, to seek your spiritual and personal truths, to question, to nurture your heart and soul, to be nurtured, to explore new ideas, to find comfort, and perhaps to find the answers to some of your bigger questions. We welcome you. We know you come from different places, different religions, different beliefs, and different backgrounds. We hope you will find comfort, connection, challenge, and love here. We hope you will find ways to provide outreach to others in our congregation, in our local community, and in our world community. So our chalice lighting will be read by Randy.
Chalice lighting is by Esther Hurlbut. It is not always easy to find love at the center. It is not a set of easy instructions numbered 1 through 7, or maybe 8. It is not always easy to find love at the center. Today in Covenant, we celebrate our living tradition, which invites us to take deep breaths of fresh air into the newness of every day. So our hearts, minds, and spirits will be continually nourished. It is not always easy to find love at the center. So for today, we gather in covenant to celebrate the reality that love is at the core of our beings, and that love will guide us if we open ourselves to the challenges which love requires of us. May we accept this challenge with dignity and grace.
And our opening music will be number 1058 in the Teal Hymnal, Be Ours a Religion, accompanied by Amber. Please stand in body or spirit. So there will be no story for all ages today because our youth are at the splash pad. So that'll give us a little bit more time for presentation and discussion if we need it. And our presentation today, as you've probably seen everywhere, is we will be, as two of the three delegates, giving a debrief of our experience and the business of the 2024 General Assembly. Patty Stockdale was our third delegate, but she was not able to be with us this morning. A little bit of the structure. Randy is going to give kind of a general overview of the GA business and structure, and then both of us will share different parts of the business that was completed, and then hopefully have a little bit longer time for some general discussion if folks have questions about what was done. So I'll pass it over to Randy.
Thanks, Johanna. For the new visitors here, the General Assembly is an annual event which our umbrella organization, Unitarian Universal Association, assembles every year. And the major business of the organization gets transacted and communicated to the membership of the organization. It was 4 days held. I think June 24th this year. It was all virtual. And there were, as I said, 4 days worth of information and 5 general sessions. Between each session, there are opportunities to listen to and watch about 60 presentations on various topics. There are also chat rooms which people could attend to talk about whatever they wanted to talk about related to the GA. So let me just maybe give you a little snippet of every general session. The first general session, actually, there are two moderators, Meg Riley and Charles Dumond, and they kept things on the straight and narrow. Session one, there was some housekeeping, introductory inspirational segments, and there was also a concluding, before I forget, there's a concluding service too. There was an announcement of the chat rooms, which I just mentioned. The organizational structure was incredibly supportive. They had chaplains who could be available at any time to talk about support if you have any issues or concerns to talk about in a very supportive way. There was something called, get ready for this, a mod squad, which in general, it was a group of people. Joanna can correct me if I'm wrong with this or can modify it. It moderated all the commentary that was done throughout the GA for if people felt offended or hurt or non-supported, they would, or the words that were used were hurtful, they would have time during every session to discuss that with the general congregation.
The other piece I'll add about the mod squad is that they were also keeping everything that I found to be very overwhelming in line, including how they used Zoom, how they had people line up for discussion. They were able to keep track of that, making sure the next person was ready, all of that. And much of it was done invisibly. So I want to give my extra thanks to them because I would find that extremely overwhelming.
And there are some short business reports, too. Session two, some finance reports about the general financial state of the organization, a bylaws renewal team report, which we'll talk about in detail later on, and then there were announcements of the general discussion of amendments to Article 2 revision and what they were, introductory discussion of the action for immediate witness. There were three of them which were talked about, Joanna will get into the details of that in a few minutes. And then you didn't vote during the session. Once the session was terminated, you voted online for the issues. It was a very, the discussions were very complex because, for example, the amendments were talked about as worthy to be voted on. So you don't not only voted on whether or not they're worthy to be voted on, but then you after that was that there was a period of discussion in the next session so you could finally vote on whether or not you approve those amendments. And that was the case with the action for immediate witness, AIWs. They would do that process. It was a very, in my mind, very convoluted, but very, very thoughtful because it gave everybody time to really pursue their thinking about those kinds of things. That was session two. Session three, there were more talk about the amendments to the Article 2 revision. There was a discussion of what was called a business resolution. And the resolution was, is quote, affirming transgender, non-binary, intersex, and gender diverse people as a fundamental expression of UU values. And then the session three closed with reports from the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee and some other subgroups. Session four, there was discussion of the voting results of the amendments to the Article 2 revision, which we'll get to later on. More discussion of the AIWs, business discussions of the various resolutions. Skip that. There was a discussion of responsive resolution, which we'll talk about later. Session five, general conclusion of the care team reports and some awards for individuals who've done incredible service to the UUA. And then, of course, the thank yous for all the work the people who were involved put into the project. Okay. Now I think I go into Article 2 discussion. Okay. Now some details. Here we go about Article 2 revision. The Article 2 is one part of the whole bylaw system of the UUA. And the whole bylaw system had not been looked at since 1987. So in 2017, in the GA, they decided it was time to look at them and perhaps revise them. So in 2021, a study commission was established. It took 2 years of hard work to complete, and they gave the board of directors, board of trustees, I'm sorry, of the UUA the final report in January 2023. After that was presented, Prairie was very involved in the subsequent communications from the board of trustees about this issue. Several meetings were held. Lots of emails went back and forth to folks. So I felt that we did a very good job in participating in thinking about the pros and cons of the revision. So as I saw it, the revision talked about a change in the overall values and principles of the UUA from the established 1985 seven principles, which we're all aware of, to pictorially, it is a flower with about six petals, with the center having love. So there's various values or principles. Actually, I think they would call them values now. In the revision, the six-petaled flower was a value rather than principles. So that was the basic contrast that people were talking about. The seven principles, which existed since 1987, and this new floral pictorial design of a change of values. Not a change of values, but revision of what UUA was all about. Before I forget, there was a discussion, not a discussion, presentation by the parliamentarian of the assembly. And this person is the general counsel of the UUA. And their interpretation of all this was that if in fact the revision occurred, it would not change the requirements for a congregation to be a member. That was Article 3, which again is Article 3 is one of the bylaws of the system. So, and that was very helpful, because one was kind of confused on how this would really affect the general nature of the membership. I think that's it. Go ahead. Yeah.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about the actions of immediate witness. A little background, if you aren't familiar with the jargon, as I was not. An action of immediate witness, or an AIW, is a statement about a significant action, event, or development in the world that necessitates immediate engagement and action among UU congregations. AIWs are drafted and proposed by UUs from around the world, and the Commission on Social Witness assesses proposed AIWs for eligibility. The eligible AIWs are introduced for discussion in an online forum before GA begins, and then GA delegates vote for three eligible AIWs to admit to the GA business agenda. So it's a multi-step process, and at GA, we had the three that had been voted on to be admitted to the agenda. And all three of them passed, and I can give you a little bit of the breakdown on the numbers of how they passed. So again, these are not things that have, you know, it's not like rules essentially to follow. It's more like these are things that a lot of UUs are really passionate about, care about, see an immediate need for, and some proposed action items that congregations could take together to move these things forward. So the first one was titled World on Fire, Humanitarian Work and Climate Change. And that passed with 95.6% of the votes of delegates who voted. And I also thought it was really important because this was brought forward by a lay UU who is from the Florida Keys, which is a community that is at great risk and is already experiencing the impacts of a changing climate. Basically, this AIW kind of framed it as the idea that, you know, climate change is impacting all of us, but it's most acutely and immediately impacting those often with the least agency and resources. So it encourages UUs and congregations to engage in a variety of movements to promote justice and equity as we are living through the climate crisis. So it's not proposing It's not directly proposing action on climate change, which is also good and important, and I would hope we're all doing, but really looking at the lives that are impacted by the changing climate right now and ensuring as much justice and equity for them as possible. So some potential actions for congregations that they offered would include education, such as screening the film Cooked, Survival by Zip Code, which is something they mentioned, identifying community needs such as cooling stations during extreme heat, which perhaps could be an opportunity for Prairie, helping provide emergency transportation and wellness checks for elderly neighbors and those without air conditioning. And a quote from that AIW that I pulled out was that religious leaders will be asked to visit detention centers, labor camps, prisons, and other institutions, and camps for houseless people to support health care and legal services and to assist with mass evacuations when needed. And I thought, well, this is great because our social action committee is already connected with Moses, already supporting our unhoused community here in Madison. So it seemed just kind of like, all right, Prairie is already engaging in some of this work. They also noted that climate change has created new problems for working people. All workers need adequate protection, compensation, and representation, and the General Assembly supports the organization of democratic labor unions. And then at the end of each summer, we celebrate Labor Day. So they thought perhaps the authors of this AIW thought perhaps congregations could highlight that weekend as well by supporting workers. And so perhaps things like a Labor Day service that educates us about the well-being of our agricultural workers in Wisconsin and how we can support their legal rights and immediate needs for safe working conditions. The second AIW was entitled Centering Love Amidst the Ongoing Impact of COVID-19. This one passed with 86% support of the delegates who voted. And this AIW really seeks to acknowledge the realities of a world where COVID has now become endemic and access to mitigation tools such as vaccines and antivirals are no longer guaranteed regardless of insurance coverage. So now you must either pay out of pocket or have insurance. It's no longer free to anybody who needs it. And then additionally, throughout the pandemic and beyond, we have seen that impacts are disproportionate among communities of color, queer folks, and those who are disabled. So this AIW encourages congregations to reflect on how accessible our community and spaces are to those at highest risk. And I, again, was pleased to see that Prairie has already taken a lead on many of the actions that were proposed, including things like a mask-affirming culture, which basically means not necessarily requiring masks, but ensuring that those who continue to mask feel welcome and are not singled out for that choice. Openness to experimenting with different community-created gathering approaches to maximize access for all, whether they are higher risk, disabled, or otherwise COVID cautious. So things like we have already embraced Zoom at our weekly services and among committee meetings. One thing they encouraged was protocols to ensure that congregations and member groups and staff can refrain from attending in-person services while they are experiencing symptoms of acute illness or have been recently ill. Again, and I think Prairie has been really at the, you know, at the head of the class on this with how quickly we use Prairie Views to communicate potential exposures in our community. And to take care of each other as well. And then they also encourage congregations to move towards meeting ventilation and filtration standards that are pretty high, as is financially possible, and we are already there. So again, yay for Prairie. And the last AIW, the third one was on solidarity with Palestinians, and this one passed with 73.5% support of the delegates who voted. This action of immediate witness immediately acknowledges the reality of anti-Semitism and affirms a commitment to the safety of our Jewish neighbors, as well as a clear opposition to the actions of Hamas on October 7th. While at the same time acknowledging that following October 7th, the Israeli government's wholesale destruction of the Gaza Strip, including destruction of medical, educational, and cultural resources, has resulted in the death of over 40,000 Palestinians, including 8,000 children. Additionally, Israeli settlers have engaged in violent attacks against Palestinian communities in the West Bank. We also know that those who have spoken out against this have been met with violence in many places throughout the U.S., including here in Madison. So the AIW calls on congregations to engage in the following actions: to call for the liberation of Palestine and the end to apartheid, immediate permanent ceasefire, humanitarian aid, and release of all hostages held by both Hamas and the State of Israel, to educate ourselves on what is happening in Palestine as a community, and to engage in advocacy and organizing, including supporting those who speak out on Palestinian rights and opposing any legislation and policies that restrict First Amendment rights. So those are the three AIWs that were brought forward.
In my nervousness, I forgot to tell you the results of the vote on on the Article 2 revision. Oh, well, thank you for being gentle. Total. the vote was 80% of the voting delegates approved the revision. 20% did not approve. And those are rough statistics. It was about 10%, I think, abstained. I'm sorry. Whatever the difference is between 80% and 100%, it was about very few abstained. I think 19% did not want it, so very few people abstained. Thank you, Mary. I'm sorry. Very few people abstained. What was remarkable to me was how many percent? I think 60% of the delegates did not vote at all.
Well, 60% of delegates did vote.
Did not vote.
40% did not vote.
Oh, I'm sorry. 40% of the delegates did not vote.
On everything.
On everything. That's been a quandary for me since day one. So. What, Al?
How about the amendments?
They all passed, yeah. Well, no, I'm sorry. Two of the three amendments passed to the revision. I'm sorry, I can't.
So if I'm remembering correctly, the First Amendment, changing the wording to all people are worthy, passed. The other two amendments did not pass. One passed. Yeah, so there was the one that highlighted reason. And I'm sorry, I do not remember the third one because I did not volunteer to take Article 2 in this discussion.
Well, it was pretty much change in wording. It wasn't nothing major on the amendments. So I think that's why we both blocked it.
Can I interrupt real quick? If we're going to have any more questions, nobody on Zoom can hear anyone speaking in the audience. So if there's a question, please raise your hand and I'll bring you the mic.
Okay. And then what did you share? Oh, it's just a question regarding the amendments to Article 2 and if they passed or not. And then, I was also going to talk about the business resolution just real quick as an explanation. So Randy gave a little introduction about the business resolution that was presented. And again, with the jargon, I was like, what is this? You know, what's a business resolution versus an AIW versus a responsive resolution? So the business resolution is essentially a staff policy. So it's not requiring churches to do anything. It is the General Assembly directing internal staff stuff for UUA staff specifically. So the resolution was entitled Embracing Transgender, Non-Binary, Intersex, and Gender Diverse People is a Fundamental Expression of UU Religious Values. And it was affirmed by over 90% of the voting delegates. While there was some discussion regarding the necessity of adopting a statement affirming those who identify in these ways when our denomination has historically always stood for LGBTQIA liberation and equality, and there are also many people who use the discussion time to repeat some untruths about trans identity and current research and medical standards for trans care, kind of show that there was still a lot of room for growth and education in our communities. And like I said, a business resolution is not so much an external statement to the community. So yes, most of the community already knows a UU church is generally a place where people are affirming of queer identities. it is used as an internal document to direct UUA staff. And I also just personally think another very cool part of GA, because I also want to hopefully get people excited to be delegates next year, is that in the entire democratic process that we use as a denomination, is that we as a community are directing the organization and the staff, not the other way around. So yay for business resolutions, I guess, was my point.
A quick addition to her appreciation. Each amendment revision was, and the Article 2, there were two chat rooms which you could sign up for, and they had a very thoughtful way of organizing who responded and how they responded. They each got a minute and a half, and there was a pro chat room and a con chat room. But they, they didn't call it con. What did they call it?
Concern.
Concern. There's a pro line and a concern room, not the conventional con. So it was very thoughtful. I'll just continue. I thought it would be important for us to briefly state the presentations that we had the honor to listen to during GA. They were very, as you can imagine, they were very diverse presentations. A lot of church business things, a lot of philosophical discussions related to church affairs. I did not do that. I did a couple of political ones. One was a Reverend Greg Stevens, who's a member of the UU Society of San Francisco. And his topic was, eco-socialism and UU tradition. And he believes that, he basically encouraged us to continue our social action work because it had a social foundation. One of the premier ministers in the 1800s, UU ministers, was a member of the UU, he was a member of the Socialist Party of America. The other presentation that I went to, it's called Humanizing Immigration by a Reverend Bill, no, I'm sorry, I don't believe he's a minister, it's Bill Hing, who's a professor of law and immigration studies, and he was a longtime immigration lawyer. And he was basically urging a reform of the detention system in the United States. And I was kind of disappointed because he didn't really tell specific concrete action. He was just lamenting the situation. And the other thing I think I should mention for those who have been very involved with UUA is I had the honor to listen to the Ware lecture. And the person's name was Judith Ward Belzer. And she is a professor of Jewish studies. She identifies as she, Jewish studies at Georgetown University. And she's a very, very staunch, not only is she an esteemed academician, but she's a disability rights advocate for decades. And it was very, very inspiring to hear her words. Okay, your turn.
And then I was also able to attend two non-business presentations that I really enjoyed. The first one was called Fat Liberation at the Intersection with Tigris Osborne, who is the executive director of the North American Alliance for Fat Acceptance, and Anastasia Kidd, who is a UCC minister and author of the book Fat Church. And this is a topic that I've gotten like really interested in over about the past year or so. So I was really excited to see it brought up at GA. Tigris gave a great overview of the history of the movement for fat liberation and the prevalence of size discrimination. Anastasia, Reverend Kidd, spoke about the historical connection between a lot of American Christian purity culture, the idea that bodies are sinful, and the way that diet culture has become a part of American culture. Dr. Kidd highlighted leaders in American Christianity who used restrictive diets as a way to control, quote, unruly bodies, such as John Wesley, Graham of the Graham Cracker, Kellogg of Kellogg's Cereal. You can see how they're still deeply embedded in our culture. And the ideas about how guilt and shame are common cause of Christian purity culture and diet culture and food moralism. Also, there was a little bit of exploration about the impact of prioritizing white bodies and the devaluing of black and brown bodies, such as historically in the eugenics movements, the idea white women should be kept fit and strong in order to allow them to birth quote unquote superior babies. I'm really interested in this topic of body liberation, and I think it would be really cool for either a reading group at Prairie or a presentation, which I would also be willing to do at some point. And then I also attended a session that was entitled "A Conversation: The Gaza War and the 100 Years War on Palestine," which featured Dr. Rashid Khalidi, who is the author of the book "The 100 Years War on Palestine: A History of Settler Colonialism and Resistance, 1917 to 2017. And this presentation was primarily just an oversight of the historical and contemporary context of the current Israeli military actions that have ensued since the since October 7th, 2023. Some interesting things that I kind of pulled out of it very briefly, that he noted that this is the first time in the history of American public opinion that there has been a majority that is focused on the liberation and safety of the Palestinian people. The majority of Americans want immediate hostage release and immediate ceasefire, which is really a first. It's never happened before. And that same public opinion shift is taking place in Europe and the global South as well. So I just thought that was interesting. And then do we have any? All right. So we're able to finish a little bit early, so that's going to give us a little more time for discussion, which I think is something that a lot of people might want. So before we move into our discussion, we're going to do our moment of silent reflection now. So I will do the chime to begin and end, as we traditionally do. So I invite you to make yourself comfortable in your seat as we have a moment of silent reflection. And now is the time that our community dedicates for discussion around the focus of today's service, relying on our covenant of good relations as a guide to ensure all voices are welcomed and relationships are valued. So because we kind of changed the structure of where the mic is, I would invite you, if you would like to speak, to raise your hand. Please wait for the mic to come to you, because that will allow any folks who are on Zoom to hear you clearly, as well as anybody who's using assisted hearing devices in our community. If you are online, please raise a virtual hand, unmute once you're called on, and everyone will hear you via our sound system, or you may type into the chat and the Zoom helper will read your comment aloud. Everyone is also invited to introduce yourself with your name and pronouns.
Okay, I'm interested in more in-depth discussion on Article 2 that happened. You know, the pros and cons that people talked about, just in general, the depth of the discussion.
There was several times in which the amendments to the Article 2 were discussed, and they all had pros and cons. And then there were sessions which they just discussed the amendment passage in general. I would say it was about the people who responded. Again, it was pretty even, the pros and the concerns, wouldn't you say, Joanna? I don't.
For the amendments, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't. And the Article 2 itself?
I feel like
for
Article 2, I was surprised. I don't think they had enough people to fill the entire discussion time. I kind of feel like, I mean, there's a part of me that feels like people had already made their decision about Article 2 itself before getting there. But they opened it for the full 15 minutes, but I don't think I don't think there are enough people who lined up to take that time. And I think a lot of the pros and concerns, I think, are very similar to a lot of the discussions we've had here at Prairie. There's a lot of people who feel really deep attachment. And I think, like, you know, rightly about the importance of the heritage of our seven principles and six sources and how they have enabled us to express what we do here to the community, as well as people who really are excited for, you know, having a different way to express what we're all about as Unitarian Universalists that hopefully is even more inviting and broader. But there was, I would say all the conversation was very respectful around Article 2 and overall very kind. So I was pleased with that. But I think a lot of people already made their decisions before they came.
Hi, this is Kate. Kind of to go further on your question, what were some of the concerns with Article 2? So were there any specific concerns or themes on concerns about it that were raised?
Are you talking pro? I mean, wanted the change or didn't want the change?
Did not want
the change. Let me think. I think people thought it was adequate as they were standing. I think they thought that it was... the revision was a bit confusing. It was much more elaborate than the original principles. That would be my two thoughts.
I think there continues to be a lot of stickiness around the word covenant. But I don't think there was... There was some discussion about that, but I think the presentation by the UUA General Counsel, who essentially said that, like, Article 2 will not in any way change, like, requirements for membership, it's not a disciplinary binding kind of thing. It's none of those things. But I think the word covenant still kind of had a lot of people worried.
Hi, this is Paula, she, her. Did anyone raise the concern of... or ask the question of how to present the reworded to children, how that would affect RE programming suggestions. I suppose there's curriculum in the works, but were there any general suggestions how to present this in a simple, understandable way to our youth?
There was not, and I'm guessing that's just because this was business voting. So there wasn't a lot of presentation on, like, what we do next with this. It was all just the voting.
And I'm sure a curriculum will be coming out relevant to this, because throughout the GA, they alluded to all sorts of resources. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking this is just coming up.
Katie Mulligan, she, her. I was just interested.
Yeah, kind of tip it and talk.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was interested in the items that would affect the Social Action Committee. And you mentioned action steps and so on. Is what you said written up and available online so we can access it and discuss it?
Yes. And I can send to Prairie Views the link to a great blog post that had a great summary of what happened at GA, as well as links to each of the actions of immediate witness to the full text. So it's all in one place. So I can definitely send that to Prairie Views. Or news. Okay, I'll put it on news then.
I want to say a couple of things. If the people here that are visitors is... We did have a meeting and a congregational vote on how we wanted our three delegates, how we suggested to them we would prefer that they vote based on the consensus. And it came out about 80-20 here, or 75-25 when we did that. So we asked our three delegates between them to make that one would vote in favor and two would vote against. I thought you might not know that. And the other thing is, if you go on the UUA websites, there's already RE curriculum are all done, There's music, curriculum, sermons that already use the new wording. They're already available. And thirdly, I think the reason there wasn't a lot of opposition voting there is I think the people in main opposition no longer belong to the UUA.
This, Anne, she, her, and somewhat following up on Kathy's comment, is your sense of the folks who voted that they voted as representatives of their congregations or that they voted as individuals?
I'm not sure, but my sense is what Prairie did was very unique. Because in the past, when I was a delegate years ago, I just went and I voted the way I wanted to. So I'm guessing that's still the culture. And I was very happy that Prairie did what they did.
And I would say there were definitely some folks who spoke during the discussion on Article 2 who... what's the word I'm looking for? Who did say that they had met with, like, their congregations had met and asked their delegates to vote, you know, either yes or no. And so they were voting on that as representatives of their congregation, not as individuals. So I think there was some of both for sure. But I know other churches, other communities did what Prairie did and had this discussion and then asked their delegates to represent them.
Kathy is beginning to answer my question. What do you see as the implications of this change for congregations?
You're asking for our personal opinion based on what we heard?
Well, I guess that's, yeah, based on what you heard, what do you think?
I'm just as off the top of my head. The general tone of the GA did not allude to any kind of schisms or major disagreements. It was a business meeting and conducted professionally. My personal sense is that people like Kathy was talking have left because of their interpretation of the passage of Article 2. There are other people. Well, I think there are people like what Johanna was. I should really sit down, shouldn't I? What Johanna was alluding. I'm okay now. I think in general there are congregations who are very vehemently opposed to it. There are congregations who are vehemently embracing it, and there's people in the middle who really don't care. And that, as I read history, that's generally how all movements occur. There are three parts. So my hope is that Prairie, well, I know that Prairie is a very creative, adaptive community, and I think we will be able to deal with this change in a very creative way, a much more cooperative, collaborative way. But we'll see.
Yeah, I honestly felt, especially after hearing the general counsel explain that a lot of the bylaws with regard to congregations' relationships to the UUA, individuals' relationships to the UUA, that the change in Article 2 would structurally change nothing about our membership in the UUA, about how we have to act in the UUA, none of that changes. I think people are still welcome to utilize the seven principles and six sources if it speaks to them. It's just not part of the bylaws anymore. And the way that the UUA is going to be presenting itself will be through this newer iteration of Article 2 rather than using the publicly facing seven principles and six sources that we used before.
Hi, this is Dirk, and I'm just, Johanna, you're starting to answer what I was wondering about. I'm wondering, because I wasn't getting a sense of why to start any of this, but you know, maybe that's emerging. I'm wondering, out of this GA, if there's a, you know, why are we doing this, have done it now, and you know, what's next?
I think there is an element in the GA that I saw, a small element, but because people thought change was necessary, we had to change. And I think as a liberal congregation, that message we don't question. We got to change to keep up with the times, to get more membership, to be more relevant. And I think the question of do we really need to do this was not really looked at. As a matter of fact, there's a ministerial group who presented some information during one of the discussions saying that we have to change, we have to revise because change is important. And this was a group of ministers who felt change for change's sake, as I read it, was important. So
Could you repeat the original question? I'm really sorry. What was the, or Dirk, repeat the question for me because my brain
I was wondering, at the GA, was there a sense of what's next, you know, kind of the purpose behind this? And now that we're through the voting part of this, you know, what's next?
Okay.
How do things move forward?
Okay. Yeah, and I think that, I mean, a lot of this came out of just that we, per our bylaws in the UUA, have to revisit our parts of our bylaws at certain intervals, and we were way overdue to revisit Article 2. And I think that's what started the discussion. At that point, too, I mean, we could have, if everybody had said, like, all right, the discussion is, we love it, we don't want to change, that would have been valid, too. But I think that, you know, there was a group who was appointed to study it and proposed this. I don't really know what's next on it, but I think it was just that's where it came from, was that it was time to take a peek at it. And I also thought it was interesting, there was somebody, I don't remember who exactly she was, but she, I think it was one of the ministers giving one of like the kind of like transitional like reflections, and she said that she was ordained when the previous Article 2, the 7 principles and 6 sources, was adopted. And she said that discussion was just as divisive and difficult as this one was. So I just thought that was an interesting kind of little piece of history there.
I think I'm going to jump in. This is John Wunderlin. I just have to say I was not surprised, but very disappointed and sad that the Article 2 change passed. I feel like the liberal UU organization I joined 20 years ago has been jettisoned by the UUA. I'm hopeful that Prairie can continue to be a supportive, rational organization that supports everyone, including atheists and agnostics who value rationality and free speech. The loss of the 7 principles and 6 sources is extremely disappointing to me, and I'm hoping we can discuss and eventually adopt the principles into Prairie's core documents, so we don't lose them. Ministers and others who were opposed to this were pushed aside or even disfellowshipped over this issue. And there is a continuing growth of organization continuing to oppose this, and I feel like UUA is going to lose a lot of membership over this. Probably not everyone, but a significant chunk. I don't think if the intent was to grow membership, they're going to succeed.
I would like to make sure that Lynn gets to speak because Lynn has the microphone, and we can answer that question discussion, but then we have reached the end of our discussion time. I'm willing to hang out after service if anybody has any additional questions or things they'd like to discuss or more info about being a delegate, because I really, really think for me personally, being a delegate has been such a cool experience to understand our connection to a larger movement in the liberal religious tradition, to be part of the democratic process in our denomination. And it's really interesting and fun, and you get to learn a lot. And Prairie will pay for it for you. So if you have any questions about doing that, please see me after. And yeah, I'll pass it to Lynn.
I think maybe in response to the first part of your question, Dirk, my impression, and it could be totally wrong, is that there were voices from marginalized groups within the UUA that felt as if their presence wasn't fully being embraced. and that there was a desire to be sure that our principles reflected a true desire to sort of, sorry to you, it's to widen the circle,
yes,
right? To be sure that we are what we say we want to be. And I think it can be difficult when we're thinking about sort of social justice and inclusion of marginalized voices. It can be difficult coming from a place of privilege to understand the experience of those who are marginalized. That's one thought that I have. I am also incredibly saddened by this notion that people are leaving an organization that is just doing its best to wrangle a whole country worth of individuals and somehow reflect that diversity within a document that we really don't have to strictly follow. Like, I just think what we do is up to us, but I think I know there's been feedback even within this congregation that yes, we want to be a place where everyone is welcome, but there's an automatic pushback whenever anything is shared that suggests that maybe we're not always. So anyway, that's just my impression. It might well not be the origin of this, but for me, it is certainly something that attempts to address it.
If I can respond to that very thoughtful comment, Lynn, in terms of marginalized communities, if you want to talk about the LGBTQ community, that was front and center throughout the whole conference. There were a couple of presentations in which that perspective, there were videos about that perspective, folks involved with that perspective who had that perspective or that lifestyle there was a video presentation and two discussions about, had nothing to do with the trans community, but they were focused front and center because they wanted to make sure, UUA wanted to make sure that community was represented in the discussion that followed. So I hope that's in response to some of what you said. And I also, from my point of view, I think Unitarian Universalism is really struggling with the fact that they're a liberal community and they want to make sure that all marginalized communities are represented. And I think they tend to at the GA, they wanted to make sure that the LGBTQ community and the Jewish community, for example, were well represented, well respected in the presentations. Lost my train of thought, but I think with that challenge to make sure that they're well represented, they forget that we are a liberal, multi-principled community, and that's a really hard balance to do. And I'm hoping, maybe I'm sort of reading what you say, but I hope that you continue to do that, to struggle with the fact that we're widening the circle community, but there are times when other communities need to have a little bit of more focus so we make sure that they get represented. My fear is we'll end up being hypocritical. We won't do that, but it's a constant struggle of balancing that. I'm rambling.
And I'll just say, kind of also to echo some of what Lynn said, going back to the through the entire Article 2 process that's been going on, I think that the Article 2 Study Commission was made up of a pretty diverse group of age, lay versus ordained, sexual orientations, gender identity, race, ability. There is a lot of an effort to touch on the needs of some of our groups within UUA, such as Black Lives, UUA, to make sure that their voices were uplifted in and considered in this process of revising Article 2. And I think that that is something, if you want, yeah, I was the one who voted. I was the one yes from Prairie. You can probably knew that already. but to, for this process to help us become the church of the open door and the open heart and the open mind, which I hope we keep using that in RE. And it is, it's, as Randy said, like, it's hard, and we're going to, I mean, organizationally fall on our face. One-on-one probably make some mistakes, but I do think that there is a good-hearted intention to try to make sure that we are being very clear that any person who walks in this door with whatever background, whatever belief, whatever level of ability can be part of this very precious, weird community that I'm very grateful to be a part of, even as we go through these evolutions and changes. So we are going to move on to our offering. So our offering this quarter is with Heart Room, which is a collaboration between families that have been homeless, Orchard Ridge UCC, and The Road Home. The money we contribute will be used for rental assistance for families. And our offertory is Dr. Gratis Ad Parnassum from the Children's Corner by Debussy, performed by Amber. So our closing words will be read by Randy.
Closing words by Deborah Hafner. As we enter another week of uncertainty in the world, let us remember that there is only one side, that of humanity and planet Earth. May we pray for peace. May we raise our voices with our elected officials and engage as we can in acts of resistance. And may we remember to take very good care of ourselves, each other, and those we love. May we remember these words adapted from the Unity Prayer. The light of love surrounds us. Love enfolds us. The power of love protects us. Love watches over us. Wherever we are, love is.
And our closing music today is our Bond of Union song. The music is inside the back cover of the gray hymnal. Lyrics are by our member, Dean Schroeder, accompanied by Amber. Please rise in body or spirit. We have a few announcements. For the next two Sundays, we have joint services, so there won't be any services or RE activities here at Prairie for the next two Sundays. Next Sunday will be our joint service with the Free Congregation of Sauk County in Sauk City. That service will start at 10 a.m., and there will be a potluck meal afterwards. And there should be childcare as well. Oh, 10:15? Okay. 10:10? I love it. Starts at 10:10. See you at 10:15. The following Sunday on August 4th is our joint service with FUS and James Reeb. The service will be at the Warner Park Shelter at 10 a.m. 9:55. And will be followed by a potluck lunch as well. And then we've also received an invitation from our neighbors at the Second Baptist Church. They have invited us to join them for a picnic under a tent in their yard on Saturday, August 3rd, so the day before our joint service, from 12 to 3. Children's activities and games will be offered. All food and drinks will be provided. Reverend Wade said in his invitation, just come as you are and enjoy the fellowship. Oh, can we get a mic for you real quick or have you come up here?
Is it on?
Yeah, right
there. Okay. August 4th, when we meet at the Warner Park Shelter, is not a potluck. You bring your own picnic and you can share with the people at your table, but it's not an overall potluck.
Okay.
This is not a big overall announcement, but today is National Ice Cream Day, and I brought little baby ice cream cones for everybody.
That was a good announcement. So at this time, we have one more announcement from Anne.
Prairie Fire newsletter deadline is today.
Thank you. So at this time, we are going to be stopping the recording for our joys and concerns.